creating cultural awareness and understanding. This is Culture Click. Culture Click is written and produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University.
Did you know that Minnesota is one of the most mineral diverse states in our country? On this episode of Culture Click, we visit with Dr. Dean Peterson, director of the Precambrian Research Center at the University of Minnesota Duluth. Dr. Peterson will fill us in on how geological mapping in the past compares to the present, the similarities between our state and Antarctica, his work experience as an economical geologist, the richness of Minnesota's landscape, and more.
They went with dip needle surveys, a kind of a compass that had a magnetic metal tip needle on the end, and if you'd walk over some magnetic mass, the needle would dip down.
I'm Terry Tensett, inviting you to learn about Minnesota geology from the rock bottom up on this episode of Culture Click. Good afternoon. I have Dr. Dean Peterson from the University of Minnesota Duluth. You're a Rochester guy?
Yep. Yeah. Originally.
Originally. Yes.
Rochester, so. John Marshall.
Okay. Now, your background, your area expertise is economic geology.
That's correct.
What does that mean for the average person?
That's the exploration for ore deposits, essentially, is what it is. It's not really oil and gas, it's minerals. So, it's exploring for gold or for copper or. Could be coal, could be whatever you do, you know. And I've kind of concentrated my career in, started out really with Newmont Exploration Limited, kind of exploring for gold. And in the end, I kind of switched to the base metals because that's actually what people need. It's looking for commodities that we as society use, essentially.
Now, you've recently done this whole comparison of the Antarctic and Minnesota. So for those of us, what are those tie-ins and how does it help us figure out our terrain more up in the North Shore?
The tie-ins for that are in Antarctica, the dry valleys, we can see everything because there's no snow and ice in these valleys. So the rock exposure is 100%. The rocks are similar in that they're kind of what we call mafic intrusions, dark colored intrusions that originally started in the Earth's mantle. And the magmas rose up into the crust where we can see them. You go up to Duluth, Minnesota, and those rocks are everywhere up there. You know, in Duluth or you go south of Ely, there's a lot of trees there. So
right.
It's hard to see what the rocks really are. So we go to places where exposure's excellent to try to understand the rocks and then take that understanding back to places where it's harder to do, I guess you would say.
Yeah. We have such a lush terrain, as mm-hmm. I would say. How do you figure out what we have?
By hard work, actually.
Yeah.
You know, it's spending months and years of your life out in the field, walking all over the place, looking at the rocks that are exposed and interpreting those exposures to areas where you cannot see anything, in lake beds or in swamps or bogs, whatever it is. We also use the glacial materials that the ice 12,000 years ago moved material from low spots, and now we can actually see it in high spots and kind of use the boulders and cobbles that, you know, we interpret where we know they're not from because they're in places where we can see the rock. If something's different in the glacial deposits, then we kind of assume it's in the lower spots that we can't see anything. I don't know if that makes sense or
no,
not.
No, it does. But, I mean, there's also scientific instrumentation that's helped
with
this, right?
Oh, absolutely. There's gravity, magnetics. The state has flown an airborne magnetic survey, quarter-mile space. Covers the whole state of Minnesota. It's like the best piece of geophysics in the whole country, statewide kind of thing. And the state recently completed what they call a LIDAR survey, which is really a digital elevation model. The data is all free to the public. It's essentially a 1 meter space digital elevation model. So we actually know the elevation all over Minnesota to the nearest centimeter, every square meter of the state. And this data is used a lot for farming, you know, where's the low spots, high spots. It's used in forestry and all the counties use it. Everybody uses it. But it's an incredible piece of information that actually the legislature funded this thing. Minnesota is different than a lot of other states. It actually thinks further ahead. Sometimes we don't think that, but they actually really do. You know, it's really amazing, you know, some of the information publicly available out there. that you just need to know where it is and how to find it and all that. But it's all on the internet, essentially.
And we're a rich state, according to your presentation yesterday.
Very much so, yes.
Can you explain that a little bit? A lot of this is privately owned land, but we're sitting on kind of a gold mine by the North Shore. And I don't know how far that continues into the state in mineral richness in comparison to Duluth.
Well, one can easily estimate the copper-nickel belt of kind of starts southeast of Ely about 10 miles and heads to the south-southwest. Another 30 miles, we'll say, that area there. I've estimated it's got a minimum of probably $2 trillion worth of copper, nickel, mineralized rock there. You certainly can't mine all that, but it's really there. I mean, it's clearly all there. And the ore deposits that companies are looking at are just these areas that the rock has been defined by drilling. And there's lots of other areas that there's been scattered drilling. We know it's there, but it hasn't been kind of defined into any sort of what we call resource category that you can actually, somebody would put these numbers out and it goes to actually the price of your stock. So there's lots of rules on all of that, stock market rules and how you disclose information and so on. And it's all about, stock scams and so on and how not to have them. So in the mineral resource industry, those rules are incredibly stringent. What companies have to disclose to shareholders and to the public, it's the rules are all out there. If you don't follow them, you go to jail.
Kind of thing.
We're dealing with, millions to billions of dollars of people's money being invested in projects that they the goal is to go forward with them, I guess.
And they have to be attainable projects.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of that is, in the end, that comes down to having really good geologists working on the projects and figuring it out, because it's all complicated, and the foundation of all of these kind of total economic geology is the geologists. There's all kinds of other people involved in these projects, be it the finance people, the HR, you name it. They're all there. But at the end of the day, it's having good geologists making good interpretations of the data that they see. And in Minnesota, that data is scattered. So that's why my talk yesterday about Antarctica and linking, where some people have the opportunity to see the rocks in a new way by going to places like Antarctica, where it's all in front of your eyes. You can see everything, and it's almost a humbling experience to be chosen to go to those places. As a scientist, I personally believe you have to give back to the science.
Right.
So that's why I come down here and give talks, and I give talks all the time to all kinds of groups of people, be it K-12 education, assemblies versus everything. It's just what you have to do, I think.
That's great that you want to give back and share the information. What were some of the biggest surprises for you on that trip to Antarctica that you learned?
Yeah, one of them is Antarctica is the driest place on Earth. It's a cold desert, essentially. We were in the dry valleys. For example, in Taylor Valley, precipitation hasn't hit the floor of that valley, they estimate, for 13 million years. It might snow, but it always...
Well, that's different, though. Yeah.
Sublimates before it hits the ground, because it's so dry there. So that the dry air actually means water vapor is not absorbed. Light is not absorbed by water vapor in the air, because there is no water vapor in the air. So your perception of your depth perception, everything, the light is very different. And it's really hard to tell how big things are, how far things are away. We have no sort of perspective here in Minnesota. We can see this, that's a big white pine tree. I have an understanding of how big that is. Now I can look across and see something else. So I have this perspective. With no trees or shrubbery there, you have, additionally, that perspective is gone. So your whole spatial world of seeing, there's a disconnect between your brain and your eyes and everything you see down there because of it's so dry. Things like this also happen in really dry deserts, but
canyons too.
Yep. It's an odd feeling, and I guess the other really odd feeling is when the wind's not blowing down there, it is total utter silence. And we just don't ever get that here. To be perfectly honest, you know, there's no leaves blowing in the wind because there's no leaves. There's no insects down there. There's nothing to make a noise. And it's a very odd feeling.
I would think it'd be hard to sleep almost like that.
Sometimes it is.
Yeah.
You know, because the sun's up all the time, too. When you're there and you're in a yellow tent and everything's kind of, it's all weird. Things are weird. It's an amazing place, but it can be odd.
How long were you out there for again?
We'd be out there for probably 5 or 6 weeks.
That's a great chunk of time.
Yeah. Camping in tents in the dry valleys out there. And 6 days of helicopters every week. We were flying around doing everything and landing wherever we needed to be. You know, our main goal was to map the geology of the dry valleys. And that was one of my goals and my kind of tasks involved in this project and understanding these mafic intrusive rocks that are totally exposed there. And, I mean, the origin of those rocks are very similar to the Mid-Continent Rift in North America, which Duluth is a great example of that. You split a continent apart, thing breaks apart, you're actually releasing pressure into the mantle, which induces melting. You lure the pressure, things will melt, and when you melt the Earth's mantle, you make these dark igneous rocks or magmas that rise up. So the whole thing linked together quite well, I thought.
That's great. Yeah, it made sense. Do you think that our state is one of the most mineral dense in comparison, or how do we compare to the rest of the country?
It's clearly one of the most mineral. Minnesota's unique in that it's got three very old terrains of rock that are really best exposed in the United States in Minnesota. You know, the classic Ely Greenstone, the 2.7 billion year old granite greenstone terrains. There's a lot of those up in Canada, Australia, and places like that, South Africa. The only real exposure of those types of rocks in the United States are in northern Minnesota. There's a bit in Michigan, a bit in Wisconsin. You also get similar rocks in some of the big uplifts out west, you know, maybe the Wind River Range in Wyoming and various other places where you get scattered glimpses of these old rocks. And, you know, those rocks form when actually the Earth really, it's the age, the 2.7 billion year old age is one of the most important ages in the history of the Earth. That is the age where the Earth system actually made continents, amalgamated all these areas together into a solid landmass. And after this 2.7 billion year old, we could actually start putting sedimentary rocks on them. And that's what we have today. You know, I mean, if you look at a geology map of, let's say, North America, the oldest rocks are in the middle, and they get younger as you go out. These rocks exposed in northern Minnesota, at least the 2.7 billion year old, are the foundation of our continent, of North America. So as we go, at least even from, go to Ely to Virginia, Minnesota, once you hit the Bowabic Iron, you know, the Mesabi Iron Range, those are sedimentary rocks. They're 700 million years younger than the ones up in Ely. We actually form those rocks in Ely, form a continent. Now we can actually have a stable platform where sedimentary processes can take place, I guess.
It's really interesting because you can learn about your area's history based off of the rocks. Like here we have a lot of limestone, so we know that we were obviously underwater at
on a stable continent.
Which is kind of fascinating in a way. I mean, tons of fossils in this area.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I grew up in this area. So, you know, I mean, I got my start in geology by being a kid riding his banana seat 5-speed all over the countryside looking for fossils, you know, and that's what I did.
I bet your mom found rocks in your pants all the time.
All the time.
It drove her nuts, didn't it?
Probably.
Yeah. Did you do the whole thing where you pour the vinegar on it to expose?
Oh, I did everything.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
My big thing was trilobites. That's what I loved, trying to find trilobites, you know. And like Quarry Hill in Rochester, they have actually I certainly didn't know at the time, Isotelus trilobite, which is one that can be up to a foot long.
Wow.
I never found anything like that, but I found pieces of them. You know, a big part of a jaw or something. It would be a piece big as my finger here, you know. No, that's part of a trilobite right there. I was fascinated by that as a kid.
I remember going on the digs with Whitewater State Park, and those activities were really fun and fascinating. When you find something, you just get so excited.
Absolutely, you know.
Is that what drove you to stay in geology pretty much in that area? Or when did you say, this is what I want to do, and this is the area study?
I started college, actually. My dad worked at IBM, like everybody else's dad in Rochester at the time. You know?
Yeah.
What did he do? I have no idea. Right? You know, he was a manager, right? That's but all. That was my world as a kid in the 70s, right? You know, but so I actually started college at going into engineering, which is fine. I love it, taking all the physics, the math, and all that. But then I actually took this geology course, you know, intro to geology, and it changed my world. Just that first course, it was like, I'm changing. And it all worked fine because I, for a geology degree, you need the math, you need the physics, you need the chemistry, you need everything. And so that one course, Bob Baker, it was at University of Wisconsin, River Falls. It just kind of changed my world. It's like, this is what I want to do. I kind of always knew that, you know, but I mean, I was a Boy Scout, Eagle Scout, and all that. Camping is all, it was always been part of my life. So, but that was it for me. You know, it was like, this is what I'm going to do.
Are there a lot of career options for people that want to study
geology?
There
are a lot of career options, you know. I mean, in, you know, my field is economic geology. It's commonly in industry, but it's also with like government surveys, lots of geology degrees. All the whole environmental field is, you know, environmental consulting firm companies, counties hire geologists if you're looking for aggregate or all kinds of different things. And you know, geologists are somewhat unique in that we have to have a kind of a broad education. It includes all the math and the physics and all that, but also you get a sense of geography and all, you know, a lot of computer related things you have to understand. Just how to put data together into
a report that people can understand.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's out there if you
it's,
want.
It's absolutely out there. There was actually an article once in the Atlantic. This is like 20-some years ago.
That's
right?
Okay.
You know? And they did a huge survey of jobs in the United States and job satisfaction. And the number one job, and you know, people doing it, love it, was exploration geologists. Rated number one, kind of by far. Because you just love what you're doing. You know, it's like, my job is, I have a pickup. You know? And I have a tent, and I'm going out and looking at rocks and trying to understand stuff, you know, so...
That's great.
Yep.
Yesterday, you pulled up a map from the 1800s, I think it
yep.
was, where they kind of knew where all the iron ore was.
Yep.
Am I correct? So how did they go about doing that way back then?
They went with dip needle surveys. So it was a kind of a compass that had a magnetic metal tip needle on the end. And if you'd walk over some magnetic mass, the needle would dip down. And they would measure the angle of the dip of the needle. And they would do this, go in quarter mile sections, and they would just go all the way through the countryside with the dip needle. Every 100 feet, you take a reading. 100 feet, you take a reading. And they were recording it on pieces of paper and go back and put them all together. You know, a lot of this is before even anything was surveyed.
Right.
So they didn't even know where they were starting and ending, you know, but they had really good, tough people doing this. And so they found a lot of the iron ore bodies by just these dip needle surveys. It's, oh, look at that. Oh, and then they would follow them out. And then that information would be published by usually the United States Geological Survey. And then the prospectors would come out. And I mean, these are the Merritt brothers out of Duluth and all kinds of the whole cadre of characters that were up in the Iron Range at the time. And they'd start digging. Yeah, start digging holes through the glacial materials and see what the rock is. So that map of Winchell's, 1891, that's how that was made, you know?
Wow, that's, was it frighteningly accurate in a way or surprisingly accurate?
Absolutely, you know, and you can still see evidence for all of that out in the field. Northern Minnesota, it's like you go into the Ely Greenstone area by Ely and you go into areas where we know there's iron formation and you walk around and all of a sudden, oh, there's an old test pit, you know?
Oh, wow.
It's 130 years old, still right there. There might be a big white pine growing out of the middle of it, but you can still see the spoil piles and everything that these prospectors, these are essentially guys with mules, are out there. Just exactly what you can imagine. And there's a lot of that stuff out there. To go to the new state park, Vermilion State Park, there's hundreds of those pits out there that these prospectors dug back in the day.
Wow, we've come a long way since
then.
Yeah,
we have come a long way. Now we fly an airplane over with the magnetometer on it, and we can make a beautiful map of the whole thing. But it worked. They discovered all the ores on the Vermilion Range, the Mesabi Range, Cuyuna Range, all of that.
Excellent. Well, let's talk a little bit about your work at the University of Minnesota Duluth. What are you doing there with the students?
What I do there, I'm a co-director of it's called the Precambrian Research Center. It's a center in Duluth kind of oriented toward teaching undergraduate students from throughout North America the art of field geology of old rocks. You know, there's lots of, you know, it's a general rule in the United States to get a geology degree. Most geology departments require you to take a 6-week summer field course. Or it's six.
Sounds
weeks
like fun.
Yeah, it's fun. You know? It's a 6-week field course where you go out in the field every day and you're learning how to map the geology in various ways. You know, I've taught courses like this out in Utah, places like that. Most of these what we call field camps are out west. They're in the Rocky Mountains. You name the state, they're out there. You'll see the groups from Ohio State or whatever university. We started a new one 10 years ago out of Duluth, kind of based out of Duluth and Ely, Minnesota, because of the unique types of rocks we have in Minnesota and their unique kind of mineral potential qualities. The rocks we have in northern Minnesota, you do not really see out west. We can look out the window here in Winona, Minnesota, and see the beautiful sedimentary rocks. You go to most of the mountainous west, it's those same kinds of rocks, but now in mountains. You know, you don't see, you know, here we're not seeing what's below these sedimentary rocks. I mean, there's 1.7 billion year old rocks below our feet right here, you know, probably down 1,000 feet, something like that, which for an economic geologist, really not that far, you know.
Right, no.
You know, you can drill down and be there tomorrow, you know, if you really. Yeah.
I could dig in my backyard 3 feet and I'd hit sand right away.
Yeah.
I remember that in different parts of Winona. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So what we do is teach a 6-week field course. We have various rules from, this is not a field course for University of Minnesota Duluth students, we'll say. I mean, you know, we have a limit of 3 students per any university. We've had a lot of students from Winona State come up there to our field camp, be it from the first year to last year. I mean, the whole 10 years worth. And so students come from all over. It's an incredible experience because most of these students are, I mean, they might be coming from Stony Brook, New York, or from University of Alaska. They're from all over, almost every state. You know, we've had students from 76 different universities and colleges come to Duluth. But what we do is teach them field geology and old rocks, wooded terrain where it's hard to see. So they get the total hands-on how to orient yourself through the North Woods, the art of crossing beaver dams. All those kinds
fine
of things.
Fine art there, sir.
It is a fine art. You know, find a nice long pole on either hand, and then you can
make your way,
you know. So 2 weeks out of Duluth, then we actually move the field camp up to Ely, stay at Vermilion Community College and kind of the double-wide trailers there. It works great, actually. You know, we spend a week out kind of in the Ely Green Zone area. We spend some time in kind of the mineralized Duluth complex there, also time on the Mesabi Range, looking at those rocks, looking at drill cores and things like that. Then kind of the culmination of this field camp is the 5th week of camp. Each faculty person takes 7 students somewhere, be it in the Boundary Waters, on a wilderness experience or some area that we know has not been mapped very well. And we start out with just contour lines of topography. That's our base. And a week later, we've gone out and mapped this area. It might be 10 square miles, whatever it is, you know, and we actually are making the first true geology map of that area in Minnesota.
That's so cool.
And then the last week of camp, actually, the students learn how to actually make this into something that's like publishable. And they're all on our website. Every map that's ever we've ever made are on the Precambrian Research Center website, and you can download these maps and see kind of what we've done. It's a very satisfying thing to do. For a guy like me, it keeps me young, actually, dealing with 23-year-olds all the time.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
If somebody wanted to experience Minnesota geology at its best, what kind of trip would you recommend to somebody who's got, like, maybe 5 days?
Oh, man, I mean, a good place to start would be right here.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Go from young to old, or not quite, but go up to, you know, Highway 61. There's all kinds of sandstones and limestones and dolomites exposed here. Do a little fossil collecting. Go to Barn Bluff in Red Wing and look at, there's a big fault there. You can see the fault plain right off the highway. That's a neat thing to do. There's trilobites there, I know, because I've been there, you know. From there, personally, I would drive up then. It's some neat rocks in Banning State Park, kind of a little bit north of Hinckley on the way from, you know, the cities to Duluth. Those are sedimentary rocks there. They're older. They're probably a billion years old. Nobody ever really knows the ages of those rocks. It's called the Hinckley Sandstone, exposed there. Some old historic, I don't know if you've ever been to Banning.
No.
It's a neat park, you know, and it's all sandstone, but there's old sandstone quarries there. DNR has done a great job of looking at the history of that. They're not active anymore by any means, but they certainly were. A lot of those things went from the Hill family in St. Paul. James Hill, big railroad baron. Mm-hmm. These quarries in Sandstone, Minnesota, were, you know, a lot of those blocks were used to build bridges, the abutments for James.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and they shipped them all over out west and so on. So sedimentary rocks down here, look at fossils. Perhaps stop at Banning, just get out of the car and go from Duluth. You can drive up Highway 61, look at the, you know, lava flows of the Mid-Continent Rift and so on in there, and take Highway 1 up to Ely. It's an incredible drive. In Ely, look at the old Archean 2.7 billion-year-old granite greenstone terrain rocks, then drive down from there into, you know, Virginia, Minnesota, maybe go to Hibbing and look at the Hull Rust Mine Pit Overlook and so on, look at the Bowabic Iron Formation. There's a lot of field trip guidebooks that are online, and people can download them free. Literally hundreds of them that are out there, you know. A good place to look would be go to the website ILSG.org, Institute on Lake Superior Geology. Go to publication sections, and there's all of these guidebooks. I've written a lot of them. There's a lot of them out there that you can just download this thing and go on a trip.
If people want to find out more information about you, your studies, where should they go? What's the best website?
Good one. Just our Precambria Research Center website. You know, I think it's prc.d.umn.edu, something like that. You know?
Right.
Just type Precambrian Research Center on Google, and there you go. You know?
Boom, you're there.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you taking time to come in.
Sure thing.
Thanks.
This has been fun.
Great.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Dr. Dean Peterson from the University of Minnesota Duluth for filling us in on Minnesota's geological landscape. More information on Dr. Peterson and the Precambrian Research Center can be found at www.d.umn.edu/PRC. I'm Terry Tunsett, thanking you for listening to Culture Click.
Creating cultural awareness and understanding. You've been listening to Culture Click. Support for Culture Click is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Culture Click is produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University. For more information, look us up on the web at kqal.org. And thanks for listening to Culture Click.